FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get three free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.
Welcome. You are listening to the Financial Survival Network. I'm Kerry Lutz. It's March 11th, 2020. Well, the pandemic is continuing onward. And where does that leave us? How is that going to affect you? How's it going to affect me? Well, we're seeing it peaked in China. They've now claimed that they've closed all 14 urgent makeshift hospitals in Wuhan province, or the city of Wuhan. So maybe this is it, and maybe it's run its course and it'll do likewise around the world. We don't know yet, but we will know soon anyway. Any questions or comments, your feelings about this pandemic? I'd like to hear from you. Email us, kl@kerrylutz.com. Right now, Danielle Park is with us. And Danielle, the market finally broke, as we've been talking about for years now. It finally reached the end of its rope, it appears.
Well, it certainly had a nervous breakdown all at once across many asset sectors and countries. Diversity was rare to be found in this latest downturn since January. And it's just a very sobering, I think, hopefully, a point of reflection for people. Because I was saying for some time that, you know, pandemic or not, the world was poorly prepared for any kind of shock to the system. This presumption that central banks can bail everyone out, save all manner of ailments, prevent everyone from financial losses, even when they're speculating and reckless behaviors. This was all a very negative, a very dangerous fantasy that people were living in. And I know that there's a lot of retired people who have been doubling down on stocks, in the past couple of years, thinking that President Trump was, had somehow got their back in this market cycle. And, you know, he was foolishly, in my opinion, taking credit for upside in markets when it was, you know, speculative momentum, algo trading, lots of leverage, all the usual suspects that were taking prices higher, buybacks. He was tweeting and taking credit for that. And of course, the unraveling part is the revelation that he is not in charge of this, the central bank is not in charge of this, and that individuals who have piled on risk thinking somebody had their back are paying in a very abrupt price. And the sentiment in, shift that happens when that sort of sudden and dramatic drops happen across the board really rattles the confidence of the consumer. Even though the consumers may not have much in the stock market, it's seen as a very leading indicator, certainly in America, of the sort of pulse of the nation, pulse of the economy, so to speak. And so when that sort of cavitates in such a dramatic fashion, I think it really does have a denting effect on people. And as I say, I think a healthy thing, honestly, because this cocky mentality of naked risk exposure without thinking, without mindfulness about your own financial plan is a very dangerous path.
Yeah, and we see what happens here. We've seen it happen many times over. But when the real rates, interest rates, the return you can get on so-called safe investments go down to next to nothing, then it seems to be human nature that you start looking for higher yields, regardless what the risk is, and it flies in the face against us all having to be risk managers of our own portfolios.
Yeah, and you know what's very interesting is that the long bond, like the 20-year long bond, for example, in America, has now matched the performance of the S&P since 2003, which is when we started our firm, Venable Park Investment Counsel. And the TSX today, which is the Canadian index benchmark, is today lower than where it peaked in the summer of 2008. So it's as if the last, 11 plus years have accomplished absolutely nothing in terms of the equity market. And this is why I've maintained all along that this is what a secular bear does. It comes into from euphoric valuations, it comes into an incredible peak where people are not paying attention to anything, they're just buying the momentum. Then it crashes, it takes years to recover, and then a decade and 12 years later, you're back to where you were and you haven't actually made any progress. So you've had just barrels of risk, tons of volatility, you know, mind numbing up and down, but not actual financial progress. And bonds have been, you know, the breaker, so to speak, but in terms of, you know, a more stable compounding effect of return. And we have made great money in bonds in our portfolios. And indeed, through this whole turbulence, the assets that we own in our accounts have been going up while everything else has been imploding. But, you know, that's totally counterculture. We've done it that way on purpose to be not trend following, not momentum following, to have a discipline to, you know, sit out of exuberant upside when it doesn't make any sense to us. And our clients, to their credit, have shown great discipline in understanding the importance of doing it in this way if we're to actually survive and thrive through the full market cycle and to maintain liquidity to be able to buy. So we're looking forward to buying opportunities. Our whole buy list is on sale right now, the things that we are looking to buy, but we're not entering yet. I think we've got significantly further time to pass here before we get, you know, potentially a bottom.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting how fast this thing has happened, which is what makes me wonder if this is a fake and it'll come back, because we've basically seen a 2-week bear market. It's been very compressed. Normally in the past, when you've seen that kind of behavior, it's what you call an interim or intermediate trend. It's not the actual trend. And that's what makes me wonder if maybe it's got one shot left on it. But it's been so violent and taken these stocks down, a lot of these stocks. Look at Tesla. Tesla was getting close to 1,000. It double topped and got slammed. And it just makes me wonder if the virus subsides, whether we go back to where everything was.
Well, there's always that chance, but I would suggest to you that the probabilities are not very high of that. And two things I'd like to add there. Yes, Tesla, Amazon, you know, Microsoft, they all got slammed in this sell-off. It was a liquidation event. So did Berkshire Hathaway, PS, down 15% since February the 21st. In 3 weeks, Berkshire, you know, down 15%. And this with record cash levels within it, $126 billion or whatever of cash that Buffett's been building up as a liquidity buffer. But that doesn't prevent the holdings within the portfolio from having the contagion of a market meltdown. So you get that, you know, you've got oil off 42% now, you've got transports off 26%, emerging markets all down more than 20%, you know, and as I said, the TSX getting crushed, the banks getting crushed, Carrie. I mean, this is a scenario where you've got this record low yield curve across the world, where they can make very little profits in their spread lending at the same time that their capital markets have totally seized up, which means their underwriting business tanks, that they've got a bunch of people looking to sell holdings, which diminishes their fees, you know, in managed portfolios and funds and that sort of thing. So you get a lot of earnings compression here. And this is within the context of an ongoing earnings decline, which has already been playing out for the last year. You know, S&P earnings have actually been in a decline now for several months. The yield curve inverted 7 full months before we had anything to do with coronavirus. So what I'm saying to you is, you know, I've maintained from the beginning, coronavirus is a nasty catalyst, but it's not the cause of what ails us today in terms of financial stability, in terms of the economy. We've had a massive downturn, first of all, instigated by the trade wars, second of all, by the top of the credit cycle, by the exhaustion in the corporate credit sector, by the fact that we now have half of the outstanding corporate debt is one notch up from junk. You know, all of these things, and then you get a spike in the borrowing rates for these corporations, which brings a good deal of stress and strain. And then people are undersaved. They have very little cash available. But the cash that they do have, Carrie, as I say, has been put into a lot of trend following assets, which have exploded. The product sales side has exploded in the last, you know, 10 very years, true. Even as the number of companies available for listing have actually come down by about 40%. You've had this massive explosion in the amount of products that have just taken packets of that and put different marketing all over it. So people all have the same holdings in their accounts in all these different labels and buckets. And then that's what you see when they need or when they start selling, both because they're levered and they need to raise cash, they get margin calls, or when they start to panic because they realize that they don't have enough cash squirreled away for a decline in revenue, you know, or a shutdown in business or a loss of income, and they start trying to raise cash. Well, everyone's trying to sell the same things all at once. And this is why you get this, you know, when you say that it's an unusual move to have such a big drawdown in a short period of time, I would suggest to you it is not actually atypical when you have the amount of leverage that you have in the world at the moment. When you have highly leveraged periods such as this, it is more typical to have really dramatic spikes down, violent rallies that try and recover, often Fibonacci retracement stuff, and then down to the next lower low. And I think between now and the fall, we've set up for an extended period of this, trying to fathom the bottom or the mean reversion of where we ought to be here in terms of realistic earnings and economic prospects.
Yeah, I guess this is the end of the bogus stock buyback thing, which has been bloating the market for years and not really doing any economic benefit to the world or the stock market for that matter, just giving the illusion that things are better than they really are because the earnings per share go up and therefore everything is fine. Well, what I want to know is we're going to be looking at bankruptcies from these companies that really abused the credit markets to bloat their stock and their bonuses. And where's that going to wind up, right?
So, you know, historically we would say that there's not, you know, you don't normally get an enormous amount of bankruptcies, but you could easily get a bunch of reconstructions and write downs and, different proceedings where they consolidate debt. Also, dividends are up for grabs here. I mean, if you look at the energy sector in particular, one of the ways they've been placating in the you know, long extended downturn that's taken place in the energy patch over the past decade and the struggle for margin, what they've been doing, of course, is placating investors with dividends and buying back shares, all at the time when actually they should be investing cash in new technology and greater efficiency and different ways to create energy in operations and improvements. And instead, they've been flowing a lot of money out to the shareholder class. And of course, now, as revenues collapse with the price here, that is an even more tenuous thing to continue. And so you see that the energy companies get hammered in this environment, but so do, you know, equity of all kinds, preferred shares, which people have foolishly thought of as some kind of a fixed income instrument in the past few years. You know, they're all getting liquidated across the board. So gold miners, you know, even though the price of gold has had a recovery, gold miners have been flattened in this, you know, so there's really been, the only safe place to be in this environment has been, you know, bullion has increased, not so much in silver, but in the gold side. You've had treasuries increase. You've had the U.S. dollar strengthen significantly against many currencies. It's down against the basket of world currencies in the past month, but up strongly against the loonie, for example. The Aussie dollar, again, a currency-based, I mean, a commodities-based play is back down to where it was in the 2009 crisis. You know, and the Canadian dollar still has further to go to the downside, which, again, is an opportunity for capital gains for Canadian investors to own U.S. dollars on a currency exchange basis. You can make some capital gain in this environment on something that's non-equity holding. But trying to, you know, pick equities that you think have, you know, are likely to decouple is extraordinarily difficult in this type of environment.
Yeah, for sure. Well, one thing, the mining companies, the ones that are actually producers, of which there aren't that many, are going to see huge increases in their profits as a result of energy prices coming down. Your Newmonts, your Barricks, and SSRs and such. Interesting thing that silver has gone down. probably still being perceived more as an industrial metal than an investment metal.
FSN Radio. It's all about what's next.
Osino Resources is a Ross Beatty-backed gold exploration company in mining-friendly Namibia. Osino's district-scale land package is situated near two producing gold mines, one of which Osino's management team previously developed and sold to B2 Gold. Osino's founders and management are experienced mining professionals who have already successfully developed and sold two companies in the past 7 years. Osino has a tight share structure, and with its current treasury, it can self-fund the advancement of its gold discovery into at least 2022. This is an exploration company with drills turning that you'll definitely want to pay attention to. Osino trades in New York under the ticker OSIIF and in Toronto under the ticker OSI. To learn more, go to osinoresources.com. That's osinoresources.com.
The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.
Also a currency, though, you know, currency in China in particular, silver has been used as a currency, as another part for people to put rather than their domestic yuan. So I think when you get a period of, again, when your businesses are all shut down, when you can't go to work, you need to have provisions. This is what I mean, a very sobering event. It's like, we don't need monetary gimmicks. We need cash. We need food. We need water. You know, and we don't, and frankly, you know, the only extent to which bullion is of value to you in that environment is to the extent you can exchange it for necessities of life. And so I think that that's why you've probably seen selling pressure on silver in the past while.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, for now.
Cryptocurrencies too, Carrie. Cryptocurrencies all, you know, sold Bitcoin back below 8,000. So again, I think this is what I mean about, let's get sober here. Let's get thinking about what the world actually turns on. And the world turns on our ability to consume the necessities of life. And in this environment, that's where the focus needs to be. Liquidity, not gimmicks. You know, yes, the central bank, the Fed might come in and cut another point next week. Good luck to you. You know, I was looking at the central banks around the world that the ECB's been negative. It's got a negative 0.5 benchmark. It's been sitting there since September of 2019. You know, the Bank of Japan, the Swiss National Bank, they've been negative now since 2015 and 16. Like once you're at zero, once you're negative, you're out of candy. There's just nowhere you can start buying what corporate debt now in quantitative easing. I mean, you can extend more small business loans. Do you know what? Small business don't actually need more loans for the most part. They need more cash and more equity and more revenue. And giving them an emergency loan may tide them over for a little bit here, but I don't see how it cleans up the fundamental issues which are going to continue to weigh on the economy and prosperity until we actually do some downsizing of the waste and the excessive debt and some write-offs and cleaning up the balance sheet.
Well, there's certainly more work to be done ahead, for sure. And the question is, like, when the market goes low enough, when does it become a buying opportunity here? Because my son asked me this very question. I'm thinking of going back into the market to buy some things. He had a bunch of cash on the sidelines. Unlike most young people, he actually saves the bulk of his income. And I said, probably a little bit too early. You know, you got to sit back and at least wait for that VIX index to come down. The VIX has been insane, Danielle.
Yeah, it's, well, Keith McCullough calls a VIX over 31 uninvestable. It's 51 today. It just shows you. But I think that we should be very careful about dip buying presumptions in this environment. As I say, we're not in a typical bear market scenario. We didn't have a typical recovery in any way. We didn't have typical market behavior in the past couple of years. We've had very levered, very highly speculative grade stuff. And in those kinds of environment, the mean reversion period looks similar, which is about twice the historic average bear market. So not a 20% drawdown, which we've had so far, but a 50% style drawdown. And that will mean a good many weak players will cease to exist or become amalgamated, and dividends are at risk of being cut in this environment. So all of our presumptions about what's a good yield on cash here, or what's a, you know, what ought to be enough, like if you're thinking from the top down, you really have to look at technical supports, fundamental macro supports on longer term views. And I would suggest that something in the neighborhood of another you know, decline of perhaps the extent we've seen so far might finally bring us back into a more fair value range, not a deeply discounted range. That would take actually a fall of more. But to get even into just fair value range about where we got in the 2009 downturn, we'd need to see another 25 or 30% to the downside from here.
Yeah, well, that would be interesting and almost certainly means a recession is on the way, if not already here.
Yeah, I mean, but in fairness, in a secular bear, in a secular bull environment where cyclical drawdowns are not nearly as extreme as they are during a secular bear period, you can have a recession with a 20% decline in the stock market, and it's not really a big deal. It's not so much that there's a recession; it's about what kind of financial excess precedes the recession, and that's what tends to make something that much more extreme in terms of outcome.
Well, we've definitely had an orgy of speculation and gambling like a few others we've seen in history. I knew this was coming when repo crisis was a clarion call. And as it turned out, the reason it happened, or one of them supposedly, is JP Morgan Chase pulled out of the repo market, meaning that they were taking collateral, treasuries, whatever, from hedge funds, from non-traditional banks. And finally they said, if they knew it was going to happen, all right, they knew ahead of everybody. I mean, I'm sure the Fed knew it as well. The Fed jumped in, became the true lender of last resort, which is what they always are. But that was the tip off. And then, of course, the market goes down like it does. And then you have redemptions in the hedge funds and then further selling pressure to meet the redemptions, right? And then it cascades. I don't think we've seen the last of it, especially with the VIX at 51. It's almost a guarantee there's going to be another blow off.
Yeah, and you've got REITs selling off. You've got MLPs, banks. Mm-hmm. I mean, I can't say that enough, guys. Every
broad-based
is in liquidation. What that tells you is that we have a highly levered environment, too little cash in the coffers, and not enough operating income to absorb the buffer of the shock that's now befalling the world.
Yeah. Yeah. So in all likelihood, maybe they'll figure out one more go round till election day. I rather doubt it. I don't see how it could be, but I've learned, and you've learned, never say never, because really they're capable of anything. And look, in Hong Kong, mentioned it before, if you've been listening to the show, there's helicopter money galore. Literally, they gave every Hong Kong citizen $11,000 HK, which I think came out, or no, they gave 10,000 HK, which translated into 1,100 US. And that's a nice little Christmas present to get there, or Easter money to fill the Easter bag or bonnet or whatever. Mm-hmm. Is that the future trend? Are we going to see that in other countries here, Danielle?
Well, I'm sure it's definitely an idea that some have about, you know, basic income supplements, about, modern monetary injections on a household level. And again, I get it, because we've done so much to rescue bankers and corporations and CEOs and executives that, you know, I understand the impetus is like, oh, really? We can't afford to help individuals with $1,000 each when we were able to give those guys billions and billions and billions of dollars. So I do understand the thinking behind it. But I think that at this point, again, you know, extend and pretend another month, another 2 months, depending on the burn rate of a household. I'm not saying it wouldn't be a nice gift to many people, but it wouldn't solve their problem. It would simply extend the consumption a little bit more before the weight of the debt starts to hit again. So we just need a clearing event. And this idea that the central banks have to keep stopping the clearing event, which is essential and necessary to restoring health, I think is a fool's game. And I think they've lost the plot here. I mean, they did their big, bold cuts last week, thinking that that was going to, you know, hopefully have a confidence impact. And what we saw was almost a realization of, oh, wow, they really are impotent now. And once that revelation hits, you know, it's a fast moving wave that really, you know, contagion is the right word for it, not just on the coronavirus, but in terms of market sentiment.
I could not agree with you more. It was really an emperor has no clothes type moment. And we see that throughout every institution in society, really, in the West. They've deteriorated. They've corrupted. whether it's colleges, whether it's banks, industrial companies, they've just become completely corrupted throughout. And if we don't have this clearing out event, even though it's going to be incredibly painful to the average person on the street in so many ways, if we don't have it, then it just puts off the inevitable. And when it finally does happen, it'll be that much worse.
And you know what? Scary. Love or hate your politicians, by all means, if you adore mm-hmm. President Trump, adore President Trump, but do not bet with your life savings on omnipotent powers and politicians. They do not control the market cycle or the financial markets. To bet as if they do is absolutely self-destructive.
Hey, and we should mention, both of us said this 3 years ago when the stock market started going up. You live by the market, you die by the market. It was insane for Trump to be taking credit for it, because now he gets blame on the way down. Oh, well, it was the coronavirus. It really wasn't my fault. The economy is still sound. The last time I heard a guy say the economy is fundamentally sound, that was in 2008 when McCain was running for president against Obama, and he got blown out as a result of failing to face reality. I don't think that's going to happen here, for the simple reason you just have to look at the competition. You know, it's kind of like the car companies, like GM excels, or whatever company excels because the others make cars even worse than they do. That's the kind of situation we're in. I could talk to you about cars all day, Danielle, but Tesla, bellwether stock of excessive speculation in the market, lost over a third, 35%, I guess it was. No surprises there. Don't confuse the stock for the company. And that's what so many people out there do. Apple, you know, wonderful company, makes great products, great overpriced products that that you certainly can do better. But nonetheless, their marketing is the best, great company. But that doesn't mean the stock is a bargain at 300. And as we found out, it clearly was not. Anyway, we got to go, but jugglingdynamite.com, check out Danielle's work. We might just be a couple of stop clocks, Danielle, but at least we're accurate stop clocks, right?
And hey, we're making money. I just go back to haven't had a bad year. Keep making money. You know, the tortoise wins the race. That's my motto.
And we have a turtle hospital here, not too far from where I live in Palm Beach County, where they rescue these turtles, fix them up, and then release them to the sea and hope for the best. Don't be that turtle that needs to get hospitalized. Be the smart turtle. Anyway, Danielle, email us any questions or comments, kl@carrielutz.com, Twitter feed @CarrieLutz, Facebook page, Financial Survival Network. The site is financialsurvivalnetwork.com. Sign up for your free newsletter, Danielle. Always a pleasure. And if you wait long enough, every stop clock is going to be accurate twice a year, right? So not that I equate us with that, but we knew this was coming.
You only need to be right twice a cycle. Basically, when to take profits and step aside, and when to have the courage to step back in. It can be at a bunch of different points, but it's how well you execute that on your own rule set, which defines the ultimate outcome of the full cycle. And until the full cycle completes, everything else is noise.
And I'll just throw in one more quote, because you know I love quotes. In the immortal words of the late, great Bernard Baruch, who I think at one time was Secretary of the Treasury, but he cleaned up during the crash of 29, and he said, "I got rich letting the other guy make the last 10%. And it's as true now as it was then. My best friend, Danielle, he had bought Tesla at 300. I begged him to sell at 650. He wouldn't listen to me, but I said, "Well, at least sell half of it, so you'll have a free ride." He sold it at 650. Then it went up to 950. He still held on to it. He's holding it to this day, but at least he's in the stock for nothing. So the moral of the story is you never go broke taking a profit. And hopefully you profited from this show. Let us know. kl@carrielutz.com. Danielle, be well. We'll talk to you in a couple of weeks.
Hey, thanks, Carrie.
FSN Radio. It's all about what's next.
Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get three free reports.
The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.